Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Happy Monday. You're listening to the Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildove, Weaver of Dreams, Grey Eye Smith, and Laurent Montagnier. So, yeah, it should be a good show tonight. We have a board full of callers so far, so it's great. I'm going to go to the studio here and pick up the callers. Hello, Katie, a.k.a. Weaver of Dreams. How are you?
I am wonderful, thank you. Hello, Gray.
Hi. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Great.
All right, so I'm going to pick up some more callers here.
What?
Area code 703. Hello?
I am here. Calling, this please. Is Miriam Kilmer, and I can stay with you probably for about half an hour.
Hi.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
I hear your voice.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Okay, so I'm going to grab another caller here. We have area code 585. Is that you, sir, Laurel?
Yes, it is. And you almost said Eden, didn't you? Garden of Eden, Garden of Enlightenment. I heard you almost said that word.
Oh. Yeah. You're busting me.
Oh, dear.
How are you tonight, Art?
I'm doing great. Finally feels like spring. God bless.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so thank you for calling in, and we have one more caller. Area code 703. Who's calling, please?
Hey, it's Zach.
Hey, how you doing, Zach? A.K.A. Herman Rodka. Great to have you all.
What a day. Finally.
Hi, Zach.
Good to be back. Hey.
Forgotten my name.
So, yeah.
Sorry, Gray. Sorry, Gray. Carry on, my dear.
That's okay. So, did you want to post the first poem?
I probably will, considering that. Probably what I'm here for. And here it is. It's Fuji-san A by Virgo Lady. Wow, I will read this one. If nobody objects, I shall click. Here we are. So here we have Fuji-san A, a beautiful picture by Virgo Lady. On a cool spring night, I gazed upon your beauty to never look away. Cherry blossoms dressed in dainty pink slips, bow to a moonlit violet canvas, majestic queen, Fuji-san. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And that's such a lovely poem, you know, it's such a talented brevity, you know, it captures the picture quite beautifully and really brings it to life through words. And what are your thoughts, Miriam?
I love that last line, Majestic Queen Fuji-san. It's, I know two or three Japanese words. And Fuji, that refers to the mountain that's in the picture. And I believe that if you address a mountain as Fuji-san, that's a title of respect. So That was my favorite part. It's got beautiful imagery and it's a lovely poem, but that's what I like best.
Great comment. Thank you, Miriam. And Lauren, what did you think?
I enjoyed this quite a bit. Mount Fuji has been the subject of many a poem, many an artistic masterpiece. In fact, the noted Japanese painter Hokusai did many, many studies of Mount Fuji at various points during the year, various times of day. I mean, they're beautiful to see. And our poet realized this was a venerated monolith and described it to us through the eyes of a poet who dressed it in great beauty. Well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Art. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was amazing. It felt like a token of respect from the tree to the mountain, just like kind of bowing itself in a way to like the mountain. to never look away from that beauty that was so sophisticated, and to not tear the gaze, tear one's gaze away from it, as opposed to like, you know, like deforestation or something like that. Like, not to really get into that, but like, it's just a reminder of not to mess with nature like that, and to keep it the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. And Weaver, what did you think?
I agree. I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's a beautiful composition, that picture as well, with that gorgeous, practically translucent moon and the cherry blossom in the foreground. Beautiful. So you can see why it would inspire something as beautiful as this. On a cool spring night, I gaze upon your beauty. That's, you know, that's beautiful. I really enjoyed it. For a brevity to hold that much meaning, for me anyway, is amazing. So few words, and yet it hits you. It really, really hits you. So very well done, Virgo Lady. I really enjoyed it.
Great comment. Thank you so much. All right, where are we to next?
Where are we to next? I love the way you say that. Oh, my. Okay. This is Crimson Ruby by Lillian Six. Now, if you just give me one moment to have a little look at this. 1 second, if it decides to open up. No, I think I'll read this one, folks. I'm sure Miriam will read it. She'll be fine with it. Miriam, would you like to read Crimson Ruby for us, please?
Sure. Crimson Ruby. Melody of loud howling sounds. All windows remain with closed curtains. 9 millimeters, enough to reach what was promised. Ash's fingers closed my tired eyes. All I could hear were the singing voices of crying hags. The view reminding theatricals, yet no deserved applause. Rusty pot down to my throat, moldy liquid flowing through those dry rose petals. Its taste does not reach my feels. Lying there on stony comforts, vulnerably, last cold smile am sending to my elders. Words escaping the living envy the dead. Stardust sits on the leaves, and the shadows of the days disappear. Crimson ruby is gently inserted into my weakened palm. Memories of crocodile tears. Ideally miss at ticking seconds of hope, ending the sound of this misery, large boots entering in. And poem.
Beautiful read. And, I mean, the poem speaks to me of pain and wanting to escape this life and into death. And, I don't know. It's really powerful. It's kind of got my heart all bunched up there. But, you know, it has incredible imagery, and you can just feel, I don't know, I can feel pain emanating through the right with ending the sound of this misery, large boots entering in. To me, it seems like some sort of, I don't know, maybe abuse or an abusive relationship or something. Its taste does not reach my feels. Lying there in stony comforts, vulnerability, last cold smile I'm sending to my elders, words escaping, the living dead, living envy the dead. Stardust sits on the leaves, and the shadows of the days disappear. Yeah, haunting, for sure. And what did you think, Weaver?
You are perfectly correct, and you're surmising that there's pain here. I have cheated and had a quick look at the AN, which explains a lot. So people have made a few comments, and then it gets to the point where Lillian herself says, I usually don't do this, explaining other readers what my poems are about, unless it's needed. I'm always interested in others' views. But as per this piece, it is actually about war times, as stories I used to listen to from my grandma. The large boots represent the rescue. So not as dire as I thought it was, because I was really thinking to myself, oh dear, this is not good. This sounds like somebody in a camp or, you know, something like that. And then, as I say, I checked it out. So horrible, horrible life or life experience, should I say. But it ended in a way that was very uplifting, large boots entering in, so they were saved. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, Lorraine. It was a great memories when it's a good ending.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Laura, what did you think?
Well, my initial response to it was kind of like yours. I felt a sense of loss of life. Someone who was possibly contemplating suicide, filled with pain, beautiful imagery, amidst the crimson ruby, a meaning, because it's a strong image. And like Weaver, when I followed down the comments, because I was struck by John's comment, where he voiced the same fears about the condition of her wife. And I saw what Weaver had quoted already, and I can see in this various places where it corresponds directly to images that could be found in wartime. So, bravo.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you so much. And Zach, what did you think?
I thought that, at first I was just rousted by the sounds of unbelievable squalor, living with the water of rust and just a sickening weakness and unbelievable despair and suffering. It just reminded me of the transition between a gulag and death. And this is a place not conducive for life, this setting. I thought it might be a domestic dispute at first, but the scale and the weight of the material is just too heavy for that. I kind of made that connection, I think. It's just crushing, but at least we had that cathartic ending of the boot crashing through, and that's what we needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Zach. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
Well, thank you, Kate, for looking over the comments and letting us know what this is about, because I was not getting there, and I was just saying to myself, I'm going to have to read this a few more times. I don't know if I ever would have gotten there, but I certainly was getting the feeling of misery. And the imagery, some of it is attractive imagery, but much of it is supremely unattractive. And so that those hints of what the poem is actually about are very helpful. And there was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh, the part I liked best is the view reminding theatricals, yet no deserved applause. And I think I read it right. I think it's important to emphasize it's not just that there's no applause, but there's no deserved applause, which is a very strong hint that something nasty was going on.
Yeah. Great comment. Thank you.
Know what the large boots are for. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Miriam. And where are we to next?
And next we have... Here we have Alutiel Phase by Titus, and there's a SoundCloud, I think. I hope.
Okay. I will look here. Here we go.
Alutiel Phase. Ovulation. At this follicular stage, the comfort-bearing stirrups, holding an egg, the sword of Damocles, at this leg of ovulation, intent cardiology releasing the syrups, associated with sex progesterone, the hormones beg, a sperm's tenacity to gloat like the whiskey drinkers whose high spirits have divulged to carbon footprint masculinity. A military tattoo of established thinkers tilt their lithium directives towards her with a glint.
Wow, fantastic read. And I really like the poem, especially that second stanza where it says, "Its firm tenacity is to gloat like a whiskey drinker, whose high spirits have devolved to carbon footprint." Yeah, a skillful and talented write, and excellent read as well. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
Oh, this takes me back. Oh, dear. Ovulation. At this follicular stage, the comfort-bearing stirrups holding an egg, the sword of Damocles at this leg. Yes, very intense. It kind of takes the fun out of it a little bit, but I think it's very well written, and I did enjoy the second. I enjoyed the second stanza as well. Quietly witty and a little bit naughty. But yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for that.
Fantastic comment. Thank you. And Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I think this is too much for my virgin ears. I don't quite get it.
Well done.
My brother, we were teenagers. My brother used to say, "Oh, my virgin ears."
Oh, I must use that. Perfect.
Yes, isn't that great?
Good, thank you for commenting. And Laura, what do you think?
Well, I don't think I'd be hard-pressed to find anyone other than a tightist who could write about the luteal phase, period of a woman, moon period, so to speak, in such clever, engaging ways. I mean, there's so many things in there that beg closer examination. The sword of Damocles, the hormones beg, the line you quoted, the sperm's tenacity, goat like whiskey drinkers, the masculinity and military tattoo of his fabulous thinkers, tilt their lithium directives towards her. What better way to describe a flashlight? I thought the second stanza was a hoot. I thought the whole thing was skillful, witty, sly, a secret grin behind a hand. Great piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Lart. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed the specificity of it, the images, because we all seen those diagrams, but rarely has it been described like this in quite this amount of beauty. And it's just amazing, fascinating, and really well written. And you could just kind of, it's very visual. It relies heavily on the visuals. Just shiny, glinting. I thought it was incredible.
Great comment, Zach. Thank you so much. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Okay, next we have, we have, it's up already, Crimson Ruby by Lillian Six.
We did that one.
Okay.
Did we?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, thank you so much. I expect an awful lot of that happening tonight. I do apologize. Half of me is asleep. The other half trying to wake up. Oh, my. I'm so sorry. I thought I recognized it.
I imagine the Lorian could wake up your other
half. Oh, dear. I'm so bad. Okay. Don't worry. It just gets worse, believe me. Oh, here we are. Now, let's get organized, Kate. Get yourself moving here. Talk to yourself sternly. Oh, now my blooming thing's not moving at all. I hate my life. Frank's telling me to wake up. Wakey, wakey. Right, yeah, here we are now. We have the Zoologist by Dark. My voice is going. The Zoologist by Dark Knight of the Soul. Look, Laurent, would you read this for us, please?
I would love to.
Thank you.
The Zoologist. I asked, "Why do dogs bark and not meow?" Mom quickly got exhausted driving the inquisitive 5-year-old me. In days before backseat TV screens kept kids entertained, she turned up the radio, and Petula Clark sang about downtown. "Why is snow cold?" I asked. She tried not to swerve down slick, icy roads in New York winters, and musters, "Oh, no," dissatisfied. I asked why Canadian geese were black and white, why some squirrels were black and some gray. Why did she name me Douglas and not Keith or Greg? My role model TV characters of the day. You got 99 million questions, she said. You always sat there. Why do moms stay home and dads work? Her face said more than words could as she thought of could have been's. Why did dad sleep downstairs last night? Dad? Dogs bark because cats meow, she said, losing patience in its walls. But I was long past interested in dogs and cats. I wanted to learn about the animals in my house, the two that argued a lot, the two I called Mom and Dad. End poem. Somebody should say something. Dead air is no good for radio.
No.
Well, oh my God, I was busy halfway through the author's notes, but in his author's notes he says I was inspired by the prompt, but as I often do, I went into the more humanistic and personal angle, less wondrous as the poetic prompt. I really was called 99 million questions by my mom. Studying the animals of my family and how they were part of society around them was especially interesting to young me. So this is a real life, purview, introspection. I thought it was talentedly written, and a pleasure to hear you read it, Lawrence. So great job. All right, Weaver, what did you think?
I think I was busy saying, I think you're on mute, Gray, while I was on mute. So that didn't really help. I thought I dropped. I thought, oh, no, I've gone. Okay, back to the job in hand, woman. Oh, this is typical of a childhood where you have a very intelligent child who has to ask all the questions. And the poor parents, the go-to answer is, I don't know, ask your teacher. That's kind of the best thing to do. But I loved this. I thought this was so reminiscent of my own childhood. I drove my mother mad, and my children drove me mad. So it's, you get what you give, I think, out of life. And if you are inquisitive, people have just got to learn to live with it and help you rather than hinder you. But I thought it was lovely. It was just so, why are they arguing all the time? What's going on? That it's not nice for a child to worry about. Their life is precarious enough without, that's not a word. Anyway, it's hard enough without having to deal with worries about the two people that you love the most. So lovely, beautifully written, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Excellent comment. Thank you. Katie and Miriam, what are your thoughts?
I just put this one in my favorites list. It's a very, very well written, and it's one of my favorite issues is reverence for children and respecting their opinions. If I certainly do understand, after your kid has asked you a million questions, you might get impatient with the million and first. But it is so important to answer their questions appropriately, to give them the information that they are asking for, and to ask them questions. I certainly agree with Kate that this poem is about more than just questions. It's also about facing your own home life. Dealing with that and helping your children to deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Laura, what did you think?
Well, I thought that it was a very nice denouement to a pointed piece. Questions, follow questions. And they had to see to the real question. Deferred, of course, as such questions often are. It was a very insightful piece. captured the grave concerns of a young boy who doesn't miss a trick. Nice depth to this piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Lawrence. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
Following this trail of curiosity, this child and their mother have an inquisitive interplay, asking questions, the child does, and listening to each other. And I love the speaker using their observational powers, turning their attention to the unfamiliar nature of their mother and father, more so than the animals that they know, because these animals exhibit all sorts of unfamiliar behaviors. And, the speaker is just prepared to use those on the parents and assess the differences and see what they could do together. I think that's great.
Fantastic comment. Thank you, Zach. All right, Katie, where are we to next?
And next we have Flood by our very own Miriam. Miriam, would you like to read this for us, please?
Sure. Hang on a sec. You said my poem?
Mm-hmm.
Flood?
Okay. Yep.
Flood. The rain from every swirling squall now fills our wetlands, ponds, and ditches with her crashes. From falls and beaver dams, her water spills and slops. She drips and drops. She splashes. We slosh through rising wet. Our raincoats swish. Our careful footsteps floundering through mush. Each movement sounds a squashing, then a squish, like winter walking noises in the slush. We slip and slither, fall in a squelching swamp. About our waists, the perilous slurry swirls. We strive to stand, returning to the stomp that marks our progress where the vortex swirls. We face our stormy darkness, trudge and tramp through slippery mud, through sloshing, sucking damp. End poem.
Beautiful read, Miriam. And what are your thoughts, Weaver? One second. I'd like to welcome Frank, a.k.a. Laurent Montagnier, to the show.
Yeah. Hello, hello.
Hello, Frank.
Good job there. Hello there. Hello, my friends.
Hello,
Frank.
Hello,
hey.
Frank.
Hello, Katie. Hello there, Laurent. Laurent McCrad. And Miriam McCrad. I believe, and Zach, of course. I forgot Zach. Hello to everyone.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to the show.
How are you?
All right. So, Katie, what did you think of the write?
Oh, well, first of all, you did not make it easy for yourself, Miriam, at all. That is wonderful. I like onomatopoeic words, and you obviously enjoy... I'm sorry, there's an awful lot of noise. Oh, it's gone. You also enjoy the sound of it as well, I take it. So it was beautifully done. I liked it a lot. I love the rain. I love the wind. I love all that kind of stuff. So I was enjoying the slips and slops, drips and drops, and the splashes. Oh, wow. You read it beautifully, too. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Kate.
Wonderful comment. Wonderful comment, Weaver. And, Lauren, what are your thoughts?
How skillful this is, dear poet. She slips and slops, she drips and drops, she splashes. What better response to an onomatopoetic contest? I think one of the commenters described your words as wet words, and they are. They're wet. We slosh, raincoats swish, footsteps flounder. Just lovely. Very well done.
Thank you.
Wonderful comment, Lauren. Thank you so much. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I just it was depressing. like where the Earth is going, like water world or something like or like that, walking through different kinds of water and rain, kind of like Forrest Gump, but not really whimsically. Just like what a muddy whirlpool of a piece. This is just, I love the onomatopoeia, and it kind of all builds together and culminates in sort of this end that you kind of suspect you see coming with the sucking damp, maybe the water overtaking the Earth, as it were, in such a way. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, thank you so much, Zach. And Lawrence, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I really did appreciate the message. You hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry. I appreciated the message of this poem here. The moral of the poem here, I did scroll down and see, although it was inspired by a contest, I really like the message here and what you profess here in this poetry. There is so much exquisite metaphors used in this. You know, I can't believe you use all the words here and metaphors that could be of just water. It's boring. But you really gave me the message and conveyed to me that, you know, what Zach was saying, a little bit of what should be done with the earth and how we should preserve it and how unfortunate it is at this state of the present time. So I thought overall you did a fantastic job. The poem really did sway me.
Thank you. That's great to hear.
Wonderful comment. Wonderful comment, Frank. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
I think I already said, did I not? Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
All right.
You did a beautiful job with this. The alliteration is fantastic. It has a wonderful flow. I like the richness in the metaphor. And, you know, what would the world be without water? You know, we would be not here, that's for sure. Because, I mean, we're 90% water as we stand. So I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful write and a beautiful read as well. All right, Weaver, what do you have next?
I'm not on mute. Good. And next we have... I'm sorry. Talking to myself again. Here we have Dead Roses by Sour J. And Zach, would you feel able to read this for us, please?
Sure. Dead Roses. The roses sit in the starlight of the lounge, choking on their soulless mud. They gag in reflex like a prostitute. A butterfly opening its mouth. Slowly, their veins suck out the girl of its own stem. Looming teenagers trapped in a plastic box. They eat themselves, swearing revenge against me. End poem.
Well, fantastic read. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
I'm not very sure, actually. It was such a swift one. I'm just having a little other look at it. Dead Roses. Well, I presume that's his outlook on life, as it is for him, perhaps, because it doesn't sound very wonderful, does it, really? Blooming teenagers trapped in a plastic box that eat themselves, swearing revenge against me. Why against you, I wonder? This is going to take me a while to assimilate, I'm afraid. But it's very well written. It certainly gets a point across if I knew what that point was. But then again, you know, we don't always have to understand. We can surmise and we can think and we can try and figure out. But at the moment, all I can say is I think it's very well written. And thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Miriam, are you still with us? No.
I got to go. But it's been great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night, my dear.
Good night.
Take care.
Okay, Lauren, what did you think?
Did you say? Oh, what?
Well, if you take the roses as beauty, beauty ill-placed will soon wither. And the soul, if it's ill-fed, withers as well. And so we self-consume. That's what I got out of it. Well done, brother. You're a brother.
Yeah, that was deep, Mark. Deep comment. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
It's sad. It's so sad. It just seems like a soulless kind of sex trafficking to me. Being shipped into boxes like that and just sent out to whoever. It's really just sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great insight. And Laurent, what did you think?
Yes, I thought the poem itself, I scrolled down to take a look at what the poem was inspired. It was inspired by a Valentine poem. And I got a feeling of that because sometimes roses, dead roses too, inspire opposite of usually a black rose there. We think of a black dahlia as well. I certainly got what Zach was saying about, in particular with the prostitute and that. You know, there is some insinuation here throughout a couple lines there, but I think it's very, and I think overall the poem really did end with that. So obviously he wrote the poem inspired by another, but he intended to put a moral at the end.
Yeah, great comment. So this took bronze in a contest by Athanasia called Roots. So that's what this is about. But yeah, I thought it captures the death of a rose quite simply. And I don't know, you know, the blooming teenager's trapped in a plastic box. They eat themselves, swearing revenge against me. He's lost me there, but I thought it was great, right? Regardless, intriguing for sure, and skillfully penned, so... what do we have next, Lee? What's up next?
And next we have, I pressed the wrong thing. No, did I? I don't want you to go away. Next we have Fool for You, song lyrics by Budho, and there's a SoundCloud for this.
Okay, I'll get that up.
Thank you, my dear.
Second here. You betcha. So we're after Budho, hey?
Oh, thank you for saying it properly. I can never say it properly. Say it again. Budho. Budho?
Budho.
Budho. Thank you. Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sits on our bedroom walls, but I can't let go of that dream. That she will be coming back to my arms, she'll be. Yeah. Some stars fall from the sky, and the sun burns up and turns to foam. But I know deep down inside, I won't be coming home, coming back to me. You won't be coming home, coming back to me. So many nights I ponder the ins and outs of us, to make sense of the madness and take us back when, take us back then. Take us back when, take us back then, take us back when. And I will wait for you till the stars fall from the sky, and the sun burns up and turns to foam. But I know deep down inside, you won't be coming home, coming back to me. You won't be coming home, coming back.
I got my lighter in the air and it's waving and singing, waving to his singing. It was a wonderful song, very painful. You know, you can really feel the loss in his right. Very sad, heartbreaking for sure. I thought he did a beautiful job of singing this, so great job. Excellent chorus as well. And I don't know, the second stanza was great too. The stars lay out in the night sky, and the moon winks back at me. But is it laughing inside? A smile a mile wide, because the joke's on me. Yeah, haunting for sure. Excellent right, Budo, and excellent singing as well. And yeah, hello, Robbie in the group. All right, Weaver, what did you think of that?
Oh, that was heartbreaking. That was just so sad. I mean, yes, it's good to get these things out, and it's lovely to be able to sing the pain, but so hard. I mean, that you're revisiting the pain every time you think of the song or sing it, but it's necessary when you're in pain. I thought it was a wonderful job. I enjoyed the singing. I liked the guitar playing. And as you say, it's not nice to hear somebody in pain. So thank you for sharing that with us, though. It was a lovely song. Thank you.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Lydia. Thanks so much. And, Lauren, what did you think?
I'm not sure about all his in pain, but as a good songwriter, he knows that people in pain need to listen, too. And when you've had your heart broke or you're missing someone and you hear this song, it's the perfect song for the way you're feeling. That's why I really like it.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Lauren. And, Zach, what are your thoughts?
The strings behind the guitars make the perfect accompaniment to the lonesome sort of like heartfelt nature of the piece, and the pacing of guitar remind me of the song Sometimes by My Bloody Valentine. A little bit more Americana than shoegaze, but it's still similar pace, and I love that. And when the speaker sings at the end, the voice kind of splinters and seems almost like on the brink of tears, but I think it just seems like that always, but especially towards the end, I thought definitely towards the brink of tears. So I thought it was very well done, very sad.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And Laurent, what did you think?
Yeah, I got the poem as well. It's very much reflective of Budo's type of writing, which he does so well. He uses emotions, you know, where others use metaphors. He uses emotions to just basically make us really reveal to us, McLean, his emotions. And this is what the song is about here. You know, when you write a song of this caliber here, you tend to use emotions to emphasize what you're actually trying to convey. In the chorus in particular was what's telling them. He said, "I know deep down inside, he won't be coming, I'm coming back for me." He knows of that yearning, and he knows, he's aware of that. And he does, Budo does a fantastic job always when he writes of his feelings. There's no exception to that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you, everybody. Great comments. All right, these are really good next.
And next we have... Next we have The Autumn of My Life by Marius Alexandru. And Frank, would you give this a read for us, please?
Yes, this is a poem called The Autumn of My Life. The rusty light scatters in the rising winds. Hills and valleys clothed in gold are smiling. The crazy leaves are dancing as they lost their minds. Over the orchards and vineyards, birds are flying. The perfume from the wine press intoxicates me, and it lifts me on the shore of dreams. My whole being stained by love shouts, I'm free. Flames, poems, and songs overflow from my chest and streams. Rains of happiness blossom in my heart, and in the autumn of my life is spring again. The dry branches walk of love have a new start. I'm a new man. I'm a new man. A sculptor to have small drops of stars, false living carpet have been laid. I walk toward eternity, forgetting all my scars. The colors of the flower slowly fade. A tear descends from the eyelash of a cloud, a ray of hope to the groaning valley. The heavens watch me. I am proud as I approach the grand finale. In the poem.
Well, beautiful read, and that was such a talented right. You know, he has such a talent with his words and the descriptions and the emotions that come with those descriptions. You get a feeling of him being ready to move on to his final approach, and so that's pretty haunting for sure. But I mean, the overall write is very skillful, very engaging, visceral and deep throughout. So thank you for sharing, Marius. And Weaver, what did you think?
I enjoyed this a lot. I thought this was so well done. We have a second life coming along here beautifully. And I particularly love this stanza that tells us what's happening. Veins of happiness blossom in my heart, and in the autumn of my life is spring again. The dry branches watered by love have a new start. I'm a new man. I'm a new man. Wonderful. I love that kind of thing. I love this, you know, renewal of life when something comes along that sparks your interest or your passions, and suddenly you are what you used to be and not weighed down by the horrible heavy weight of old age, which is not so much fun. So yes, I liked it a lot, and thank you so much. It kind of made me feel happy, Marius, so thank you for that.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Lauren, what did you think?
Well, since the stanza I was going to quote has already been quoted twice, I shot quoted a third time. Let me simply say that there is many a moment of joy to be found even in the last days, which are the bookends to the first days. Great writing, great insight.
Awesome comment. Thank you so much, Lauren. And Zach, what did you think?
I love the just like it's a launch point from autumn, the rusty glow freeing the poet, and like finding steel within the form of written words, poems, flames being stained with them, kind of going out into the world like that, and just being almost baptized by the rain into the form of like a new man, and then just sort of keeping that self, but kind of like fading slowly afterwards, towards the end of his existence at that point, maybe, as they approach the grand finale. And we all know what that means. So I really enjoyed this.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Zach. And Francisco, you read it. What did you think?
Yes. I really like the prosaic nature of the poem. The sense of the metaphors here, they're very striking here. The imagery is just, it's just immersive, you know, in a sense. He writes such a way that gives us an introduction of what poetry should be when you're inspired. And he uses inspiration in all his poetry. When he's not writing about his wife, he's writing about nature. And that ending there, which I thought was very telling there, the grand finale, really does, you know, you can epitomize that as well with Mother Nature as well, the things that happen, you know, whether it's a flower, whether it's a tree in Soviet, it all has an end as it has a beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Well, we're getting closer to the end, I can tell you that much. some of us quicker than others.
I still have another hour left there, Katie.
What was that, darling? What?
Another hour.
True. True. Okay. My. Right, the next
one.
No, I meant the end of our life, not the end of our show.
Oh, I, forgive me there. I thought I was listening. It must be the hour for me then.
Oh, my goodness me. Okay, I know I'm down, but I did remember it. I actually remembered with another hour. Ah, dearie me. Right, so we have now Dali and Martinis in the Sistine Chapel by our very own Pam Ray. And this has a SoundCloud grave. I could ask you to stick that on, please.
Alrighty, here we go.
Dali and Martinis in the Sistine Chapel. I want to love you like we're in a 1980s music video. Bright neon lights, bold and garish, funky dance moves spilled into dark corners. I would sip from the rim of a dirty martini, make eye contact with you. I would spread myself across the hood of your car, posed like a beer commercial. And we'd both laugh when three bullfrogs and Spuds McKenzie showed up, offering my wares and my dares in wet t-shirt escapades put through the ringer. I want to show you the low-cost, high-power, no smoke and mirrors, revelation of love that can turn another page. Would you pretty please, with sugar on top, make a bad girl's dreams into a reality? No cop-out, just handcuffs, a strip down with no tease, straight to the nitty-gritty. Come to me like a tiger, and I'll purr up your thighs like a pussycat. Pleasure and pain, both in the same refrain. Put your rock and roll heart next to the beatbox rhythm of my jazz blues. Let's join together in petrichor persuasions. Take a stroll on the lake walk where birds are singing and waves are rolling towards agates ready to be gathered. You can smear my pink lipstick and I'll gather the cards to stack our decks. Coal in the furnace, curling smoke as we ride this train to daisy chains and summer picnics, moonlight and madness. Peach preserves and butter spread on home-cooked bread to whet an appetite ready for the next round, relishing the full charge of a cool night breeze, a paddled expedition of fishnet stockings. We can become hooked to a Wonderland thermal charge of vim and vigor, shaken, not stirred. And just when you think you've fallen all that you can, my grip becomes an uncontrolled substance. a slightly uncomfortable situation that leaves me begging for another round of leather and palms. Clean knees sacrificed to the dirt that spells our names, and kicked up dust of country roads, my skirt drops to your feet, and we melt like Salvador Dali painted the Sistine Chapel. End poem.
Wow, what a beautiful read, and such a powerful poem. Holy cow, you know, it's just reeking of sexuality and a bad Pam. I want to show you the low-class, high-power, no-smoke-and-mirrors revelation of love that can turn another page. Would you pretty please, with sugar on top, make a bad girl's green in reality? Wow, Pam. I don't know. I never felt so voyeuristic reading a poem as I have now, so thank you for making me blush. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, thank you for making me blush. You know, nothing makes me blush. But I thought it was wonderful. I just love her going over the top the way she does occasionally. You know, I always think of her as Mistress Pam. Not afraid to give you a little telling off if you need it. But this is just perfect. This is just so good. And that last two lines are just too good. It was. It was really such well written. Never anywhere near the edge where you might get uncomfortable. Just beautifully written, and you are taking from it what she is giving you without any doubt at all. You know, nothing needs to be spelled out. It's perfect. I really enjoyed it. You can spear my pink lipstick, and I'll gather the cards to stack our decks. Oh, so clever! I love it. Now, thank you, Pam, for sharing that with us. You made me smile a lot.
Great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Lauren, what are your thoughts?
And we melt like Salvador Dali painted the Sistine Chapel. And those are quite possibly the best final lines to a poem in this genre. You want to talk about a fly on the wall, taking it all in? No cop-out, just handcuffs. A strip-down with no tease, straight to the nitty-gritty. Come to it like a tiger, and I'll purr up your thighs like a pussycat. Great simile, great metaphorical skill all throughout this piece. Many a smile raised, many a period anecdote noted. We can become hooked to a wonderland thermal charge of vim and vigor. Shaken, not stirred. Damn, Pam, you stir me, but no shaking, please.
Any comment? Thank you, Lauren. And Zach, what did you think?
This is just an enchanting night at a biker bar, a chance encounter with another that leads to a steamy night of devious debauchery, teeming with delight, and observing the push and pull, the give and take, and the cat and mouse. Really well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Zach. And Francisco, what did you think?
Well, you know, the humor that she always uses, or the wit, it's always appreciated by me. And of course, when she writes this type of poetry, which is has a bit of eroticism into it, Pam knows how to be erotic. She knows how to be witty. And I think she knows how to display the Sistine Chapel better than Salvador Dali.
Yeah.
It's a great poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Well, we're into open poetry now. And we have... We have Astro Cadet Stands Alone by our very own Zach. Would you care to read this for us, please, Zach?
Absolutely. Astro Cadet Stands Alone. Waited for one to find me, ascending the cliffs from below. Black hole rainbows spew, limestone grotto, step spiral, ponytail travels up her small back, steep, black braided in a cable, meeting a royal raven crown, traveling up her small steeple-shaped ivory tower, mind to breathe, mind soft, waiting so long, comes none, on the cliffs at world's end, sitting on a centered equator, face, a balanced coin, grabbing nothing but air. End poem.
Well, that's deep. You can really get the loneliness out of that. It sends the heart aching for the Creator and the space that they're in, longing for that connection but not getting it. Just dark and lonely. Oh, great job. Thank you, Zach. And Weaver, what did you think?
I agree. This is deep, as I would expect from Zach. And I love the picture that you put in there, because that really is something special, which is your poetry as well. I like "Waited for One to Find Me, Ascending the Cliffs from Below. Black hole rainbow spew, limestone grotto steps, spiral ponytail travels up her small back." Now, I read that all in one, which I shouldn't have done, but you know your poem, so you'll understand, won't you? I thought it was really good. The tension to it. It seems to be this tension, this waiting for something is there. Ah, yes, I like it. I want to hear more about this. I want more of this particular poem, and tell me what's happening next, because I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Lawrence, what did you think?
Wow. I was mightily impressed. I mean, there were so many lines in this that were just well worth quoting, such as "black braided at a table meeting a royal, even crown being one such." This seemed to me a gothic dream almost. A look behind the veil, answers about to be revealed or never revealed, speaking powerfully to the imagery portrayed above the words. The two are not inexplicably, the two are very intertwined. Is this written to that image? Zach?
I used that image with AI after I created the poem. So that's my image.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, cool. It was so closely intertwined. That's a great answer. I envy your skill, young man.
Yeah, no kidding. It's amazing. All right, thank you, Lauren. Great comment. And Zach, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Just thank you. It's good to be back. I appreciate all your comments. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. And Frank, would you like to say anything about Zach's poem?
Yes, you know, someone who appreciates dark poetry, I can really relish the whole notion of what this poem depicts here. You know, you bring a sense of writing when you write this type of writing, and you use metaphors, but you also bring a storyline to it, and you do that effectively here. And I like that whole notion there of her going up, traveling up, going up the shaped ivory tower, but then you stay grabbing nothing but air. You leave the reader always interested from the beginning to the end with the imagery you provide and the narrative as well. So you did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great job, Zach. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Next we have... Sorry, my mic's going haywire. Next we have "Ghost of Poe" by Laurent Montagnier. Frank, would you care to read this one first? I tried.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, I tried.
I'll say it to you one time. Laurent Montagnier.
Cool. I will remember that, but thank you.
All right. This is a poem that I wrote. It's called "Ghost of Poe." "By the rack of night flies the raven, but such a harrowing croak I dread, over the burial grounds of a lawned haven, as he glides forthwith above my head. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. Too brash as this awful bird that I see within the wind that whiles me quickly at the eerie graveyard and his solitary lee, so I am blinded by darkness thickly. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. Thus the unsightly seeming do drum, till the night harrow me with a riddle, and will haunt me till the brink of dawn, as my sweating hands and fingers twittle. Hark, the whispers, nevermore." dressed in black with a walking stick in hand, within a strange niche graveyard of the living, the shadow of a gaunt man aside a black cat, and those headstones tenfold of his misgiving. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. That abandoned wretch, too dim and dreary, passing within the silence of his gloom, and banished to the isolation dire and weary, beside the prying eyes of the dead that loom. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. A guise laden of the ungainly man they besought, his brow, forehead, hazel eyes, ne'er a known, his mien seemed careworn and bethought, whilst the brush raven had told as he rose. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. I said, you are cursed in the night of fright, and a man lost but in the guilt of his shame, between a rusty gate swinging with such might. Mr. Poe, Mr. Poe! I called out loud his name. Hark, the whispers of nevermore. Gone into the night was the elusive Poe, as I harked whispers of his words new, in the weight of his empty soul, low, faltering slowly within the dripping dew. Hark, the whispers of Lenore. End of poem.
Wow, Frank, you're so damn artistic, it's sickening. You know, you did a stage play with that reed, which is just a talent in itself. But, I mean, the whole rite is just it really captures the essence of Poe and what it would be like to meet his lonely soul at a graveyard. Just awesome throughout. Great job, Frank. Thank you for sharing.
I appreciate that.
Excellent read as well. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. This was well done. Well done, Frank. I like the whispers. That was really creepy. Very well. I actually started to get the shivers. I don't know whether that. I don't know whether that's your poem or whether it's Scottish weather. Yes,
well, that is Poe himself
really,
there.
Well, ha, yeah, right. Oh, but I mean, imagine meeting him in a eerie graveyard. That would, I mean, I would love to. I'd sit there and have a chat with him. I think the man's fascinating, wonderful, wonderfully done. And so many, there's so many stanzas here you could pick. But that abandoned wretch, too dim and dreary, now deafened within the silence of his gloom, and banished to the isolation dire and weary. Beside the prying eyes of the dead that loom, oh my goodness me, blooming dead. Well done. I really enjoyed it. I think I like your creepy ones so much because they are just, there's nothing gory about them. They're just light and careful wordage, which I really enjoy. So thank you so much for that.
No, I appreciate that. I thought about you tonight for this.
Great talk. Great comment, Weaver, and thank you, Frank, for sharing. Mark, what did you think?
Frank, more than slightly occasionally, you write something that really causes me to up my level of respect for your writing. This particular poem is one such. I don't know how you've managed to channel Poe, but nonetheless you have. I don't know whether to thank Poe for being alive at one point so you could channel him, or thank you for writing it in beautifully the style of him. I adore this. A guise laden of the ungainly man I besought, his broad forehead, hazel eyes, narrow nose, his mien seemed too careworn and bethought, whilst the brash raven cawed as he rose. That's magnificent stuff, my man. Congratulations.
Well, I appreciate that. That's when I used to write serious poetry back then, there, Laurent. 2016, that's this time.
I hear you.
Eight years ago.
Great comments. Zach, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it, Lord Montanay. From the icier frames to the maddening tension pursuing the riddles at night until morning. The tone remains mad and full of self-assurance, and it just bursts with tension, and I just love it. behind the rusty gate swinging with such might. Mr. Poe, I call out loud his name. If I could only see that, for real. I really love that, especially the refrain, the refrains rather, and Hark the Whispers of Lenore, the one at the end, sort of a little bit different, but still referring to the raven, of course, to end it. And I thought that was wonderful.
I appreciate that. He's always been, I think most people know that Poe's one of my inspirations of writing dark poetry or dark short stories as well. I have to tip my hat off to him for being my inspiration. One of my inspirations, but he is one of my favorite inspirations.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Zach. And, is it illegal to channel Poe that well? Outstanding, says Lauren. And hello, Hope Soul, out there. So where are we to next, Weaver?
Okay, next we have... here we have... Unimpaired by Laurent Yvon. And Laurent, if I could ask you to read your poem first, please.
I will. All right. Unimpaired. There grew ridges along the edges of the vast Windermere plain. Dry rock and sand since time began, where it almost never rained. In these outcrops lived a snake, whose eternal curlings marked the dust, which was the world he knew, the one he'd grown to trust. Black beetle provided breakfast. Sand scorpion was his lunch. Of the whereabouts of dinner, he had neither clue nor hunch. At the edge of vision came a flickering, slight motion more than wind. Snake caught sight of its noiseless flight, the butterfly's chagrin. Sudden surging upwards, elastic jaws enveloped prey. But rather than attempting escape, butterfly had only this to say. You have caught me fair and square. I knew I flew too low. But before you swallow me whole, I have a secret, something you should know. Snake was far too curious not to let butterfly tell his tale. In this land of acrid desolation, there was little he would not avail. Come then, silken wing, loose, tell me what you know. Tell it to me good and proper, and perhaps, he hinted, I'll let you go. I'm colored a brilliant red, spots of purple hue. Hungry predators know the signs. Something bad you should eschew. Poison on the wing, a deadly dart to pierce your gut. End to your existence. Thread of life in two, I'll cut. Snake hissed his derision, swallowing in disdain, and coiled convulsively in agonizing pain. He regurgitated immediately the now sodden butterfly, who lay drying in the sun, watching snakes slowly die. Truth was my best defense. You ignored the secret I shared. And off he flew into the Windermere, hale and hearty and unimpaired. And...
Wow, Lawrence. I don't know, you know, I mean, I know it's a bit of a dark story, but it's also factual and life-filled, you know, like there's so much lessons to be learned in that poem. I don't know, I wrote you should be a children's book writer, you know, I mean, I know it's a bit dark, but you have such a skillful way of telling your story and having the reader's imagination captured from the beginning. Your talent really shines through on that, Lauren. Thank you for sharing. And Weaver, what did you think?
I agree with you. Totally agree with you. It's so well written. This is such an amazingly interesting story. You know, because I mean, I am particularly fond of butterflies. I think it's the Libran in me. I love the balance of their wings and their colors and everything they come with. And I like anything about them. So this is just fascinating. We have a butterfly with a brain. Isn't that just wonderful? Just give you the truth and you'll never believe me and you'll be dead. I liked it very much. I think you're a wonderful sale. Thank you.
Thank you, Weaver.
Thank you, Weaver. Would you like to say anything about your poem, Lawrence?
I can't believe it or not, the word Windermere popped into my head. And I thought of the vast Windermere plain. It's just an image in my head. So I described the image in the first stanza. And then from there, I found a snake. I mean, look, you're writing, sometimes it's a voyage, it's a voyage of discovery. You're not really sure what comes next, but it comes. And if it's decent, you keep it. So, you know, this kind of thing takes me about when it hits, you know, when the muse says yes, it flows. It probably took 15, 20 minutes, and it was just there. And, you know, for all its sins and ills, I thought it was cute, so.
Yeah, it's fantastic, Lauren. Thank you so much. And, Lauren, what did you think?
Well, you know, Windermere, there is a Windermere, Texas here, which is has it's a cropland place. It is, it's located near a place called San Marcos. He took me on a journey there just to remind myself there. Butterflies, I'm envious of butterflies because I truly love their nature. But I like the whole idea of the snake here. You know, you brought us just using humanity. I agree with what Gray said. You have a wonderful ability, my friend, to use narrative to always introduce to us your talent. And I do find this piece much of that display there. You just bring us, you use the background of the snake and use the background as well of the butterfly to really convey to us really the sense of what you say there in the end. Truth was my best defense. You can all the secret I shared, and off it flew into the Windermere, hale and hearty and unimpaired. Just a vision of what the Windermere can be, you know. You left me with that impression there.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome. Great comment, Frank. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was wonderful. It reminded me of a cross between Watership Down and The Land Before Time, without dinosaurs, but populated with carnivores and herbivores. The dire survival of the wild is highlighted in this piece, in the turmoil and strife of nature, and its Darwinian sort of way is definitely well written. And I enjoyed the what a couple of characters. What a brilliant butterfly and sneaky snake. Well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Zach. All right, Weaver, we're with you next.
Okay, and next we have Awake to Sleep in You by Hope Soul. And I'm going to read this and I will do my best, Hope, not to stumble too much. Awake to Sleep in You. Let me love you again, more than I did in our last embrace. Let me have this way with you in the softness between breaths beneath these ribs, right there where madness begins. Right when you laid those lips so warm on the darkest part of a woman and kissed this beating flesh and gave life to undead things. And I fed you blueberry cakes that had crispy edges, which you folded, the hand of cards that fell apart when I shuffled the deck, scattering apart like smooth glass that took that final leap. Suicidal art, and I bleed on each shard. Leads me to taste the dreams. Tonight, on grapes and brandy, let me marry you again. Allow this widow to have a midsummer night's dream. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And it's such a touching poem. You know, you can feel the connection that she has with her lover, and the life that they've shared together is something that you know, she'll take with her forever. And allow this widow to have a midsummer night's dream. Just a haunting, haunting ending. Well done, Hope. Thank you so much for sharing. And Lauren, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was a stellar work. It's an emotion they've an emotion. She formed it into words that touched the heart all the way through this. But I was so in love with the opening, "Let me love you again more than I did in our last embrace. Let me have this way with you, the softness between breast, beneath these ribs, right there, the madness begins." Bravo.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
There's such a longing expressed to have one more moment or two that is more tender than the last time that they touched, especially since we know what happens at the end of this one, and it's devastating. I didn't think it would go that way, but I didn't think that it didn't really. It was just bittersweet. It wasn't like happy or sad. It was both really, but geez, Louise, yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment, Zach. Thank you so much. And Francisco, what did you think?
Well, you know, this is a very, very personal, very visceral poem. You know, I too was drawn by the lines at the beginning. And I find, you know, that Hope does a wonderful illustration of her emotions, her attachment to her lover, to the person that she means, that means so much to her. And she has a sensational ability to be able to magnify at times with just breathtaking metaphors to describe the yearning that she shares in her poetry. So this is a fantastic poem. And I really like the symbolism of this poem.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Frank. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
Right, next we have, I have it here somewhere, yes we have, next we have "So You Forget About Me" by Nuno Cardoso. And Zach, would you like to read this for us, please?
Sure, let's see, okay. "So You Forget About Me, and how I used to write poems, how I used to dance with, like dark tentacles that so fondly embrace my brain. You forgot about Billy Boy and booze and LSD, the tails of a dog chasing his own tail. I no longer an ouchie or touch that other junk, but I'll light a cigarette for that. So you forget about me and how I break lines and write odd stanzas like Magnus Carlsen plays uncomfortable openings and plays with pawns. The man learned the rules of chess just to break them all into little soldiers, much like I do with poems. 15 years, he's been world champ. Wonder if I'm the, oh, never mind, I'll see you in hell, champ," end poem.
Well, fantastic read, Zach. And I like the poem. I mean, who wants to be forgotten about, you know? And he feels lost and forgotten about. 15 years, he's been a world champ. Wonder if I am the, oh, never mind, see you in hell, champ. Wow. Haunting. But beautifully penned. And, it's incredible. What are your thoughts, Weaver?
I agree. This is another beautiful piece of poetry. And, yes, you can see where there is that thought that things are changing. Things have to change. But sometimes it's not that easy to forget and get yourself back into doing what you used to do, which is, you know, your poetry and all of those things that you enjoyed. So, yes, there is sadness, but there is light as well in this, which I really like. I see it. And I hope there's more of that because it's deserved. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Absolutely, great comment. And Francisco, what did you think?
Yes, I really like just the way this poem is conveyed. You know, he brings in a lot of his images throughout this poetry. Very, very personal. I like the way he describes, you know, he uses names like Billy Boy, booze, LSD, talks about things of what's going on in his life. But he also magnifies that with the expression of that, never mind, see you in hell. You know, it's just a very gravitating poem, and you know, it just makes you reflect. You did a good job on that.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Frank. Thank you so much. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
It was amazing. Just between two opponents, dueling for a while, apparently. This is a long feud. And it's so intricately written, and they know each other so well, especially in that third stanza. This person knows the moves of the other person, player. And while he's acknowledging it, the moves, he just says, oh, forget it. You know, I don't care about that. I'll see you in hell. You know, I'll play that. I'll be there with you, and we'll get it done. We'll see who wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Great insight, Zach. And where are we to next, Linda?
And next we have, if I'm right, yes, we have, now let me get back to here. This is Vacuum Cleaner Blues by Lawrence 67. And I am going to give myself the amazing privilege of reading this wonderful work by my friend, if no one minds too much. I'm going to give it a bit of oomph. So just don't, I'm just knocking things over here, getting so excited. Okay. I'm there. Okay. Va-va-boom by Lawrence 67. The Dickens, you say. Look at the cat. Ah, oh, cool. Right. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie Alfie in the Dangerous Vacuum Cleaner. Nigel. Hey, L67, what are you doing with all those boxes? L67. Well, Nigel, if you really must know, I must. I'm building you and Alfie a fortress. Huh? A fortress? What's that? Well, Nigel, if you really must know, I must. A fortress is like a safe place to be when danger comes around. See, I stack these boxes and you and Alfie can hide in them until the danger passes. Nigel, danger? What you talking about, danger? We're not scaredy cats. We brave cats, huh, Alfie? We don't need no stinking boxes to hide in. You crazy or something? Heather? L67, get them cats out the way. I need to vacuum over there where you piled on them boxes. Ba 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 boom. Nigel, huh? Yikes. Watch it, Alfie, coming through. Shit. See, don't fail me now. Run, Alfie, run. Alfie, huh? L67, I'm going to run up your leg. Danger, danger, help. L67, ow, ouch. Alfie, get off me, damn it. You've got sharp claws. Ow, ow. Heather, ba ba boom. And end poem.
Great read. And I thought it was another fabulous adventure of Nigel and the Fat Cat. Nigel and the Fat Cats. What's his name? I can't find it. But the other cat's name. Nigel the Fat Cat.
Yep.
Yeah. But he really does a great job on this series of these cats and their adventures. And this is no less that. It really is a crown on the whole subject. So great job. Thank you for sharing, Lawrence. And Lorient, what did you think?
Yeah, I think he does, as always. I'm an admirer as well of his writing. Yeah, at times, you know, we have poems that are he does always a really, really, I would say, emphasize this. He does a great job of personifying his characters, both for them, Nigel and at Lawrence 67. And he uses a dialogue, which he does effectively. So I thought overall, he did a great job.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I loved it. It was just a whimsical tale of two cats coexisting in the same house with the loud the squalor of the vacuum cleaner. I'm totally familiar with that scenario. Usually to have two cats. So I just really love the interplay between all the characters. And, it was just, I agree with what Laurent said about the dialogue kind of telling the story. You could easily follow it and with the directions that it goes through. And it kind of just follows a through line path that you could like easily detect the action through the dialogue. So I really like that. That's what's hard to pull off, and I really enjoy that skill. Very well done.
Great comment, Zach. Thank you so much. Okay, Weaver, where are we to next?
And next we are Just a Dream by Jessica C. Wheeler. And Gray, would you like to read this one for us, please?
Sure.
Ha-ha. I told you.
Just a Dream by Jessica C. Wheeler. In night's cruel capture, where consciousness dangles, I'm chained to memories that break with morning. I beg a brisk breeze to bargain in my favor, sway my somber slumber, bring the bright sun. Find me in the void, nestled between dark and light, where I fell at dusk and linger till I rise. Breaking dawn, shatter, disrupt this daze. Pull me now from the precipice of peril, for I fear another fall in sleep and foam. Wow, that was interesting. And what did you think, Weaver?
It was very good, wasn't it? Find me in the void, nestled between dark and light. Oh, yes, I can appreciate that. Where I fell at dusk and linger till I rise, for I fear another fall in sleep. Yes, I can understand very well how that feels. This is, if it's a dream, then it's not a very pleasant one, I don't think. Not by the sound of it, anyway. But wonderfully written and most enjoyable, because I'm always interested in other people's experience with sleep. I like people to tell me what it feels like to them, and just to find out, because it's a weird feeling falling asleep. I don't know why we have to sleep, to be honest, but we seem to have to. So yes, I'm really interested in this one, Jessica. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that wonderful comment. And Laurent, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think we all go through the spectrum of consciousness. You know, when you think about a dream or it's a nightmare, it's always vivid in one form or the other. And I think she does an excellent job here conveying the notion here of a night's dream here. And when she says, in particular, where I fell at dusk and lingered till I rise, you know, it's a very, very powerful rite here. She really does make you get into just the picture, the vivid nature of the nightmare or the dream.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Greg. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
I thought that it was amazing. Breaking down night into day like that, there's like a special interplay, and there's a very real sense of disorientation that the speaker goes through, like switching off the lights on and off. You don't know if it's dark or if it's light outside, and that's a scary thought, switching between those two extremes, and it's very vivid. And switching between the sun and the dark, the void, and the breaking dawn, not the version like in Twilight, but rather this one, which is way more inventive. Very well done.
Excellent comment, Doc. Thank you so much. All right, Weaver, where are we to next?
The next we have Dawn Calls by Lynne Gauthier, and this has SoundCloud. Yeah, this is a SoundCloud Grey.
Okay. All right, just 1 second.
Dawn Calls, a poem by Lynne Gauthier. Dawn calls. In the dark without a sound, on tiptoe not to stir, holding our breath, we wait for daybreak. As afar, we wonder if we heard, tugging at our heartstrings, a faintest echo resonate, the coo of a mourning dove, grieving solo, while in comes dawn.
Well, beautiful read. And that's a lovely poem. It's very sad that, you know, that she's calling to her lover who's gone, grieving solo while in comes the dawn. When you see doves, they're supposed to be in twos. And unfortunately, this one's going to spend the day alone, which is heartbreaking. But it was beautifully penned. It was a fabulous read as well. And Weaver, what did you think?
Oh, I agree. This is just, yes, it's rather sweet and rather sad. Sorry, these kind of get me sometimes. I always hope that it's actually just fiction and not something that someone's going through. But as afar we wonder if we heard tugging on our heartstrings, a faintest echo resonates, the coo of a mourning dove. And I love the way, I don't love the way, but I appreciate the way that it's a mourning dove and not an M-O-R, M-O-U-R, grieving solo while in comes dawn. And again, as you said, there would normally be two. I think this is a sweet, sad, very well-written piece of poetry. And thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Absolutely, great comment, Weaver. And Lorient Montaigne, what did you think?
I think the poem really just, you know, I listened to at times the cooing of the morning doves, and I always appreciated them, just as I do with the sparrows. This it's very sad. It is very sad. But it also makes you realize the nature that we, you know, as human beings, we are surrounded. We're not just ourselves. There's other beings that exist, and they go through hardship as well. And this is just a beautiful brevity as well, and just a wonderful illustration there of the sadness there of that poor mourning dove.
Absolutely. Excellent comment, Frank. And Zach, what are your thoughts?
It's very sad, Robert. Heavy. I know it's about doves, but this one could pertain to really any bodies lost someone, transcends that sort of that box of being within nature, and you could just apply that to a lot of kinds of grief, not just within the realm of birds and like aviary birds and all that, like animals. You could just essentially substitute your own version of this, and it would very much well feel similar. It's a similar impact. Really well done.
Great comment, Zach. Thank you so much. All right, Weaver, what do we have next?
And next we have Moon and Water Lilies by Twinkle Star. Lovely. That sounds wonderful, doesn't it? I'm going to read this one because I'm a lady and I've got a lady's voice. I don't know how I get away with it sometimes. I really don't.
Oh, I can always do a female voice there, Katie.
What was that, my love?
I can do a female's voice, but I'll let you do the honours.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll just do that very thing. It's hing-a-boot, lad. I'll be with you in a minute. Okay.
Oh.
Moon and water lilies. Oh, beautiful, beautiful picture. Like an altar of dreams flows rustling through snapping twigs of our forest of thoughts, a jewel blue stream around crystal heartbeats, amidst the crackly ferns and clumps of moss, quenches our thirst for spring, deep into the endless white nights. The moon weaves our best of pearls, hiding in the candle flame, dripping wax on the bedside table. It calls for our names in the stillness of the night and takes our dreams through the darkest forest where the earth cries, we hear it scream. The silver moon rises and dives into the waves, faded in blue. The air flows warm, shrouded in perfume mystery with the scent of water lilies. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And that was such a lovely poem. You know, I just felt like I was floating throughout the poem, floating in this heavenly sky. I thought it was beautiful from start to finish. And it was written to a contest on Pisces' birthdays. And so that was beautiful. She says in the author's notes, as a Pisces myself, this is a realm I often like to swim in. Yeah, I could picture that. Just beautiful. Thank you, Twinkle Star, for sharing, and congratulations on your front page pick. All right, Francisco, what did you think?
You know, it's a very ethereal poem here. I really like just the mention there of the moon, the crackly ferns, the clump of moss, the still of the night. She takes us on a voyage here, you know, and ends up with the scent of water lilies. You know, it's just a breathtaking poem, you know. You can sense, you know, the imagery throughout the poem and really feel, and you get a sense of what's being conveyed.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you so much, Craig. And Zach, what did you think? Mm-hmm.
It's a very focused image, a poem based on imagery. It's very visual. As a water sign myself, I can kind of see it for sure. Not as a Pisces, but like I could just still sense that, and it's very just well written, very well written nocturnal ocean setting. Just amazing, and just exquisite landscape from top to bottom. Very well written.
Absolutely. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
I read it, didn't I? I thought it was beautiful. Of course it was beautiful. Just so, the words basically just take you floating along with them. It's such a beautiful picture painted. And you would want to be there. You'd want to be able to just float and enjoy the moon rising and the waters and the waves and the air's warm. Oh, I would love to be somewhere where the air is warm. Oh, bliss. So, yes. And to top it all off, we have water lilies. Who could ask for more? That's just perfection. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Twinkle Star. I love your sobriquet. Very nice.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you so much. All right, where are we heading to next, Weaver?
Next we have, oh yes, The Cycle by Michael Jude. Zach, would you like to read this one for us, please?
Yes. The Cycle. Rain descends to kiss the ground. Neath the grass, no sight, no sound. Caressed upward through the root, slowly rising towards the boot. Warmer now, the sun outside, sucking silky sugar slide, wrapped within this earthly skin, warm, protected here, within. Onward, warmer, faster now, upward through the sturdy bough, twisting, rising, spreading limbs, hotter now, a pulse begins. Pressure building to explode, pollen, petals, spew, unfold, falling, weightless, wet, alive, come together, fall, then rise. Puddles swallowed by the ground, the drops above, the fading sound. End poem.
Wow, that was a beautiful read. And a lovely poem on the subject of rain and how it feeds the life on Earth. And, you know, there would be no life on Earth if it wasn't for water. So thank goodness for water. And he says in the author's note, life is not porn. Contest rule said no porn. I suppose that depends on your definition. LOL. But no, it was a fantastic rate throughout. And, yeah, he did a great job reading it, Jack. So what did you think, Wheeler?
Yes, I like this. I like this a lot, this title. And so it's so beautifully written. The first couple of lines are just so good. Rain descends to kiss the ground beneath the grass, no sight, no sound. I love the fact that it has this movement to it. It's a bouncy. It's not, you don't read this in a monotone. That's not one of those poems. It's got its own rhythm and its own cadence, and it's just so good. And so warmer now, the sun outside, sucking silky sugar slide. Beautiful, really. You could read this one all day long. But I won't, because that would be boring.
Absolutely. And Lauren, what did you think?
Well, maybe just me, maybe it's the hour, but this poem does have a little bit of sensuality to it. If you take, what he's using here for metaphors here, just to go through the metaphors and just, convey it in sensuality, it's a very erotic poem. But I thought overall it was just well written. It took me to that line, and particularly when he said what you just said about the bottom. I suppose that depends on your definition. So he's very, very, very much witty as well.
Yeah, I agree, Frank. And Jack, what are your thoughts?
I agree. There's definitely elements of eroticism and there's definitely, I like watching the rain as it behaves and kind of just slowly rising towards the boot. And sure, there are some of these words are definitely make you think of different things, but for the most part, it remain firmly terrestrial, grounded within the experience of just witnessing this rain pour and this water nourish the earth. So I thought that was very well done.
Great comment, Jack. All right, where are we next?
Okay, next we have Bright Star Watching by Brian T. Duffield. I'm so sorry. Who read last? That was you, Zach, was it?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, help me. Okay, this we have Bright Star Watching by Brian T. Duffield. And Frank, could you read this one?
Yeah, Laurent, yeah, you could.
Yeah, well,
you did
yeah,
my
yeah.
name there.
I'll do it sometime. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. This
Thank
is
you.
Called A Bright Star Watching by Brian T. Duffield. A bright star shimmers over still seas. It inveigles me, steering to Rome. The Spanish steps are a steep climb to mount. Breath. Labors, suffocating heat. It's a voyage, a troubled ocean, turbulent gale, tempest rage, skies crack, swirly night, cloudless skies now paint, still hallowed gold, blackened cloud, spangles a bright star. End of poem.
Great read. And I enjoyed that. That was beautiful. Each line flows effortlessly and really brings together the whole thing as an orchestrating piece. So I thought it was beautiful. And what were your thoughts, Lee?
Yes, it was. It was beautiful. I like that. It's a voyage, a troubled ocean, turbulent gale, tempest rage, skies crack. Wow. That'll be the lightning, I should imagine. It's certainly got some vehemence about it. There's some real intent here, probably to get out of the sea and onto dry land, but I thought it was very well done. It gives you the whole idea of what it must be like. I don't know if any of you ever sailed through a storm with sails as opposed to an engine. It's not that easy. It's quite scary. So yeah, unless this is all wrong and I'm thinking about another piece of poetry, it was very well done. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. And what did you think, Frank?
Yeah, you know, he brings the imagery there from Rome to the Spanish Steps. Yes, I took myself to conceive the notion there, what people were saying, taking a trip on a boat there, or a ship. You know, it's wonderfully displaying just the visual nature of the ocean, the gales, the tempests. It's a beautiful, beautiful writer. I thought the poem was wrong, but it just took me on a trip there.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. And Jack, what are your thoughts?
I loved it. It seemed to me like there's a little bit of dark patriotism about this. It seems to me that some of the language almost imitates Francis Scott Key's script, The Star-Spangled Banner, but in a kind of way that's sort of sinister. Steering to Rome, the Spanish Steps, those are like, to me, representative of empires. And like this one, spangles a bright star, bright star watching. It's like America's watching as an empire, almost. It's very sinister sort of poem to me, like in that regard, sort of like an eye, almost. That's what I got from it. I don't know if that's the intent, but it just kind of terrified me a little bit.
Well,
ominous.
Great comment. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Weaver, we have next. We have 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, then we will have... my stupid piece of rubbish stuck jumping everywhere. I'll be with you in a moment. I'm trying to post it, but I'm not getting back to where I want to go. Oh, my goodness me. Oh, I've opened up a whole new window. That'll be why I can't find it. That was clever. Can do that when I want to. I'm joking. Of course I can. I'm just trying to get this link. I'm wittering, as my mother would have said.
You're not wittering. Not too much, eh?
Oh, dear. Thank you. You're so kind. Seconds are ticking away. Wasting. Oh, here we are. Right, I've got this. I've got this one. Look at her. By Teresa Stretchkinoff. I love that name. And it goes a little like this. Look at her in her long red dress, big, beautiful, dark eyes, I must confess, a mesmerizing smile at home in her habitat, so serene and between, flying high. Goodbye. End poem.
Great, completely, and I thought it was beautiful. I mean, she really captures this person with the beauty that captured her when she wrote this, so I thought it was wonderful. And what did you think, Frank?
Yeah, I'll be brief, you know, just brief to poem. I thought she did capture the essence there of herself, looking at her in a long red dress, the big, beautiful dark eyes. It's just a wonderful illustration there of what the simplicity of life can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment, right? And Zach, what did you think?
An indelible portrait of a beautiful woman at home in her habitat, maybe about to say goodbye, and who knows what that means, but it was very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Yes, I like this a lot. Very clever. So she's big, beautiful eyes and long red dress, so she's dressed up for something, but then suddenly she's off home. So, and flying, my goodness. Yeah, I thought it was beautifully done. I really enjoyed it, Teresa. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. All right, well, I'd like to say thank you to everybody that called in, shared their hearts and minds, their voices, and most especially your time. Much love, everybody. Have a wonderful night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Well, I'll just take care.
Night, Zach.
Good night, Zach. Good night, Frank. Good night, Gray.
Good night,
John Boy.
Katie.
Thank you. Good night to you.
Always good job.
You're too kind, and you lie so well.
Oh, no. It's just my opinion.